Okay, so hello everybody. This is Tim Brennan, Treasurer of the Unitarian Universalist Association. Welcome to our quarterly investor call. The first thing I'm going to do is to mute all the lines, and then we'll do the presentations, and then later on open it up for questions.
All guests have been muted. You can unmute your line by pressing star 6.
Okay, so I think everybody's muted, but hopefully Kathleen is on the line. Is that correct?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Good. Yes, I can.
Great.
So welcome to the quarterly call. We're going to do our usual presentation. Kathleen Gaffney is on, and she is the chair of our investment committee. For which we're very grateful. Kathleen will give us an overview of the performance of the recent performance of the fund, and also talk a little bit about the recent investment committee meeting and what the committee is working on. So, without any further delay, the other thing I should say is that Kathleen will be referring to a slide presentation. If you registered for the call, Susan already sent it to you. But if you're on the call and you didn't register, you can find it easily by just going to www.uucef.org. So that stands for UU Common Endowment Fund. And over on the right side, in that right column, if you go down a little bit, you will see a link to the presentation, and that will provide you the slides that Kathleen is referring to in her presentation. So with that, let me turn it over to you, Kathleen.
Okay, thanks, Tim, and thanks everyone for joining us this afternoon. As Tim mentioned, I'm going to run through performance and talk a bit about what we discussed at the recent investment committee meeting. Hopefully have some time to discuss some additional topics as well. But let's jump into the performance, which is on page 3 or slide 3. And what you see is the net performance summary as of April 30th. Now, today we're talking primarily about Q1 numbers, but we wanted to provide numbers through April 30th, and you can see that April, the one-month number about halfway through the slide, we had another good month, so following along Q1 performance. April, the fund net of fees was up 11.3%, and that compares to our policy index, which was up just below 10%, and the allocation, so how we're weighted around the policy, of 10.3. So the difference above policy and allocation does reflect the manager selection. So fiscal year to date, those are very strong numbers, and for the first quarter, contributing to that, we realized a 5.6% return gross of fees, which put us in good standing with our peers, ranking third in the universe. And we'll look at the longer-term numbers against our peers a little further on. But the committee in general is pleased with this strong performance over the last 12 months that has pulled up the recent performance and some of the medium-term performance as well, keeping intact the longer-term performance. What I would highlight away from the entire portfolio is on the equity side, so if you're looking at that first green-shaded line, you'll see that for the month of April, the domestic equities were up 1.8% versus the Russell 3000 at 1.1%. And fiscal year to date, up 17.7 versus the Russell 3000 at 16.3. So adding 140 basis points relative to the index. We also have investments in international equity that also saw good returns in April, 3.5 versus the MSCI ACWI. So an international benchmark for us. It excludes U.S. stocks. Fiscal year to date, we're lagging a bit. We did see some volatility, particularly in Europe over the last 12 months, but posting good returns at 15.3 versus the index at 16.3. What held us back a bit was Boston Common. And then our recent investment in emerging market equities with RBC, well, they had a very strong April with some of the volatility that we saw last year in global markets. It hit emerging markets in the short term, and so we are lagging there. But overall, the equity part of the fund has been doing well. If you move to slide four, we can take a look at the fixed income portion of the fund. The fixed income portion is 20% of the fund right now and contributing good performance relative to fixed income. Our benchmark here is the U.S. aggregate, so a benchmark that includes primarily treasuries, agencies, mortgage-backed securities, and some corporates, so very high-quality markets that are subject to a fair amount of interest rate sensitivity, and we've seen interest rates move up since the election. You'll see that the index, the U.S. ag, looking at that fiscal year-to-date, is down 1%. We are posting a positive 2.5% return, which reflects the mix of fixed income exposures that we have. And I'll talk a little bit more in detail about some of the shifts we've done on the fixed income side. I think on the last call, I highlighted that the committee had been working on a fixed income review, and we had made a decision to reduce some of our more interest rate sensitive benchmark-like strategies and look to improve returns by adding a multi-sector and a global multi-sector strategy and anchor that with a low-cost treasury position. And you'll see, looking at that one-month column, where there have been dashes in some of the longer-term lines, those are the new positions that have recently come into the fund. But overall, fixed income, which we often think of as low return and our anchor to windward, has been doing what it needs to do, posting a low but positive return, and we think our changes position us well as we potentially move into a different interest rate environment. Below the fixed income, you'll see a new category, opportunistic investments. That's also 20% of the fund. If many of you recall, in the past, we've had a specific allocation and category for hedge funds, and I've, on either the last call or the prior call, we had made a decision where we did not want to have a targeted allocation to hedge funds, but would be willing to use hedge funds that we thought would provide good return potential and diversification, as well as being open to more traditional fixed income or equity strategies that took on a little bit more risk and offered greater return potential that didn't fall into the hedge fund category, and we think of those as more opportunistic investments. It gives the investment committee more latitude and allows us to get away from a targeted allocation to hedge funds, which have gone through a period of challenging times, generating return, but also under a lot of focus because of the high fees. We think this is a good way of getting exposure to opportunistic investments and should benefit the endowment fund. And then finally on page 5, we have our private markets, also an opportunistic category, but one where our investments are a little less liquid, but with that lack of liquidity give us a much higher return potential. It's a relatively small allocation. You can see looking at that top green line that the policy where we'd like to get over time is at 5%, and we may potentially increase that. And currently, only 2% of the endowment fund is in that category. There are 3 investments, and we are looking to make our capital allocations to those funds as they require the capital. But those are the 3 areas that we have selected to invest in this area right now. It is an area that we think does provide good return potential, but does require the committee doing a fair amount of due diligence with our consultant, NEPC. And it also provides us an excellent way to access our mission to incorporate our UU values and look for strategies that are providing a positive impact and fall under the ESG category. So we have some opportunities there, as well as community development and a modest position in cash, some of which is being held for those private market investments. So the committee is pleased with the direction that our recent shifts have taken in terms of our allocation and our ability to move up in our rankings and the returns that we're seeing. If you look at page 6, just to highlight the important performance measures of note, as I mentioned earlier, first quarter ranking 3rd, outperforming allocation and policy. The 1 year, so near-term performance has also been pulled up, 11% gross of fees, so that puts us about median with our peers. And then over the 10-year time frame, so long-term, which really matters most, performance has ranked in the top quartile. So we're very big supporters and proponents of active management at a reasonable fee. Active managers have had a hard time with index funds and the market moving up in one direction. We're very comfortable with our current positioning and how that's impacting performance. And so this quarter, one of the slides that we wanted to add to give you a sense of some of the shifts in the fund is on slide 7. And this is our asset allocation history, and it goes back to 2008. And from my perspective, looking at what some people call a sand or a lava chart, it gives you a good sense of the stability in the fund in terms of fairly stable allocations with some modest changes over time. And the highlights that I see moving out towards the right is our equity component, equity domestic, equity international, and equity emerging market, has grown over the last few years. and importantly, picked up more of a global allocation. I think that as guided by NEPC, this makes a lot of sense in terms of opening up our return potential, particularly when U.S. asset valuations appear stretched. And we're also facing what looks like a secular decline in interest rates. And so we've also reduced our overall fixed income allocation, as you see in the lighter blue shaded portion and the small red line, a gray component, and a teal component. And in the very short term, to describe what we've done on the fixed income side, you do see that shift in fixed income, that it's come down, but also the mix is very different than it's been, say, in 2012 and 2013, when it was primarily domestic core fixed income, which is very high quality and sensitive to the direction of interest rates, and had some global. And we've shifted that to give our managers more flexibility to take advantage of where they see opportunities in global markets, but also in credit markets. And yet our concerns with where interest rates are headed has caused us in the last, over the last 12 months, to change that light blue core shaded portion so that it's there and it provides that anchor. But given the challenges that we see ahead, we've diversified it with that small red area, which is a long treasury position, very low fee, but that's where we have our anchor to windward and our offset to any volatility in the market. And then we have gone with a mix of multi-sector managers, one focused on credit, one focused on global, and another that is global top-down and higher quality. So some shifts, but the overall direction has been going more global, increasing equity, and reducing our interest rate exposure within the whole portfolio. The orange shaded line is the opportunistic area, so that has also grown a bit over time, and again, allows us to get some very different exposures without targeting hedge funds that we think over time are going to help us with returns. Turning to slide 8, we move on from asset allocation to a good view on how is all of this playing out with the fund, and how do we compare to other endowment funds of a similar size. You'll see at the top of the chart on page 8, it's our composite, our fund, versus our peer universe, which is the investor force, all endowment, 50 million to 250 million size. So it gives you a good idea of where others are in the pack. And on the left-hand side, you can see the very strong quarter. We don't want to focus too much on short-term numbers, but just to direct you, the circle is the UUCF endowment. The triangle is our allocation, and the X is policy. So policy is what our target positions are, and then the allocation is where we are around that policy. We might be a little underweight or overweight within a range. The difference between the dot and the policy and allocation is driven by the manager selection. So quarter to date, very strong. Fiscal year to date, also just at the very bottom of that top quartile, with other peers in the top fifth percentile earning just under 12, with our composite earning 10.2 and the 95th percentile earning 5.3, and the median at 9.4. Good performance and good ranking there. Also, you're seeing that in the one-year numbers. We are lagging in the 3 and 5 year. With the 7 year and 10 year, our longer term numbers, which I think reflect our discipline in terms of long term allocation and sticking to an active role of investment managers with some ESG and low fee strategies as well, puts us in good standing, either median or second quartile. So long-term numbers, 6.8% and 5.3% in the 10-year, not far behind that top percentile of 5.9. So hopefully that perspective on short-term and long-term is helpful to all of you. Slide 9, I'm going to skip for just a moment. I'm hoping that our socially responsible committee chairs, Kathy Mulvey and or David Stewart, can address that slide. So briefly, just jumping ahead to slide 10, to review the highlights of the committee, performance as we've just reviewed. We also spent some time managing two of our equity managers, Sands, who's been a strong long-term contributor, very high active manager, good long-term returns. They can and do have some volatility in the numbers, but they came in and presented their strategy. The committee was very comfortable with current strategy and the team that is involved. We also reviewed a small cap growth strategy, Peer Capital. We've been somewhat disappointed with that performance and determined at the end of the committee meeting that we would be looking to NEPC to consider some alternatives down the road. We also took a first look at MSCI's analysis of our carbon footprint. It's the first time we've seen that report as a joint committee. And so that's also helpful information for all of us to have on both committees, which is the last bullet point, that this was our second integrated committee where we spend some time with just the investment committee, some time with just the SRI members meeting, but the bulk of the time with both committees meeting together as we move forward in continuing this process of integration. And two action items that we came away with from this committee meeting was to form two subcommittees with members from each committee, one focused on our screening process and communication, and another subcommittee focused on looking at the investment policies of both committees so we could work on where there's overlap, where there's difference, and how we want to move forward together. I think all the committee members would tell you, and I'm sure Tim will comment, that this process has gone quite smoothly. I think we've all benefited from hearing the topics that each of us discuss at our own meetings, and we found quite a bit of common ground, which I think is exactly what we want to do at the Common Endowment Fund, is have an investment strategy that delivers on returns but also reflects our UU values. So I'm very happy with that process. And that's it for me before we get to question and answers, and I'm hoping Kathy or David can chime in on their own comments and hopefully slide 9.
David, are you on, or Kathy? Okay, so I'm not hearing either of them right now.
No.
So this is Tim Brennan. Who's on? Is that Kathy?
Hi, this is Kathy. I'm on. Yes.
Okay. So over to you then.
Yes.
Kathy is one of the
not
two
co-chairs. Not to put you on the spot.
Yeah. Kathy is one of the co-chairs of our Socially Responsible Investing Committee, along with David Stewart. So, Kathy, I'm happy to talk to the MSCI slide if you want, or you can talk about it. It's your call. Or if you just want to talk about committee integration, whatever, the floor is yours.
Sure. I just would echo what Kathleen said about the progress that we're making with the committee integration and helping to ensure that each of the committees is focused on its distinct areas of expertise, while at the same time really working together on the on an approach that ensures that our commitments to socially responsible investing and ESG are reflected throughout. So, but I'd be glad if you would give an overview on the carbon footprint.
Yeah. Sure, happy to do that. So I think most of you will recall that 3 years ago the General Assembly passed a business resolution focused on investing in fossil fuel stocks. And basically what it said was that we should avoid the fossil fuel stocks unless we are using those shares for shareholder advocacy, which in fact we are. But as we got deeper into this and in talking with other colleagues at other institutions who are concerned about climate risk in portfolios, the world has really moved down a different path, or a related but parallel path, and that is to look at what's called the carbon footprint of the whole portfolio. So I'm hearing a whole lot of noise right now. Is that, Kathy, is that maybe you or Kathleen?
Do you want me to mute in case that's me?
I'm trying to mute, but I'm having trouble, so I may have to sign off and dial back in. Sorry.
Okay. It's okay. We engaged MSCI, which is one of the leading SRI research companies, to look at our portfolio and say how much carbon emission is there reflected in the companies that we own, and how does that compare to the broader index? And so we learned some interesting stuff here. If you look at the top left of that slide, really the big number we're looking at is this 81.5. So that is the amount of CO2 emissions per $1 million invested. It's tons of CO2. And the interesting thing is that 81.5, it's right around half of the MSCI ACWI, which is the benchmark. In other words, if you look at all the companies in the investable universe, they are on average having 158 tons of CO2 per $1 million invested, and we're at around half. They also have set up a target, which they call the MSCI ACWI Low Carbon Target, and this is basically a model portfolio that has really the kind of lowest level of emissions possible, and it's aspirational. But the interesting thing is that we got to this very positive result with kind of in the dark. So last year was the first year we ever did this analysis. This year we are a good deal better than we were last year, and it's because of our consistent application of ESG standards to the portfolio. So we have been considering the environmental impact of the companies that we invest in for a long time. And so as the portfolio has evolved, it's actually become this low carbon emitting portfolio without even really knowing we're doing it. And I learned something just yesterday that relates to this, which is there was a study done recently of mutual funds that proclaim that they're fossil fuel free. So they're eliminating all those 200 oil and gas companies and coal companies from the portfolio. But those portfolios actually have higher carbon emissions than the portfolios that contain those companies. And so how is that possible? If you look on the right side of this chart, the two kind of donut graphs there, the one on the right shows that fully 41% of the emissions from our portfolio come from utilities. And if you look over to the left, you'll see that the utilities represent only 2.2% of the market value of the portfolio. So the emissions are really concentrated in utilities and then also significantly in materials. The energy sector, on the other hand, only represents about 12% of the portfolio. So if you're eliminating those fossil fuel energy companies, you're really not hitting the ultimate emissions of your portfolio. So we found this study very interesting. A lot of companies are starting to do it now. I mean, a lot of investors. And the promising thing about this is as more and more investors consider the carbon footprint of their portfolio and strive towards lowering it, that has a huge impact on demand and a huge impact on emissions, because what you're doing is you're moving capital towards the companies that are using energy most efficiently and being productive at a lower emissions rate. So this is a very positive step. So before we open it up for questions, is there anything that you, Kathy, or Kathleen wanted to add?
The only thing I wanted to add is just to let folks know that in the slide deck, the supplemental information that we have provided, typically we always give you our manager summaries so you know who those managers are and what their strategy is. We've also included this time a number of slides that start on page 22 or slide 22, that some of the feedback that we've gotten of late is providing more information to all of you out there who are invested or considering investing in the fund, some detail and background on who we are and how we're managing. And we certainly don't want to turn this into a pitch. We want to answer your questions and use that time. But those slides are available, and hopefully will give you some insight to how we're all working together and may give you more questions that you do want to ask us down the road. So I just wanted to provide that information.
And this is Tim again. The last comment I'll make is that, interestingly, we just learned in the last week or so that two of our managers are recent signatories to the UN's Principles for Responsible Investment. So what the principles do is they are a commitment from the investment manager to factor in environmental and social impacts as well as governance issues into their investment process. So last week when Sands Capital Management met with the investment committee, they told us that they had just signed the Principles for Responsible Investment. And then today, this morning, I was at a meeting with GMO. We've been with GMO for a decade, and they told me that they have not even announced it yet, but they have just signed the principles and will be announcing it very soon. So I think that's a great thing because it means they're hearing from us and other investors like us who are telling them that it's very important to us that they do consider environmental, social, and governance impacts when they make their investment choices on our behalf. So now I'd like to open it up for questions. Actually, even though your lines are muted, you can unmute your line by simply pressing star 6. We actually have quite a crowd on the call. We have 48 callers plus our presenters. So hopefully we'll have a few good questions that we can try to answer. So go ahead, press star 6 if you have a question, and then ask it. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Beverly from the Mountain. Just a quick question. Could I get a copy of the Principles for Responsible Investment? Or is that a covenant or a statement?
Yeah, so you can do it one of two ways. If you send me an email, I will send them to you. So you can do that, just treasurer@uua.org. Or you can just Google Principles for Responsible Investment, and their website will pop up. But I'm happy to send it to you.
I'll go to their website. That's great. Thanks. That's all.
Sure.
But thank you for this. I've learned so much.
Good.
And I appreciate the socially responsible effort.
Hello.
I heard somebody else. Go ahead. Yes.
Yes, my name is
Donald Bradford. I want to commend the committee for the terrific recent performance. You were doing a fine job, and I'm happy to see the great improvement over the 3 to 7 year period that we had in the past. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Brad. If somebody else was trying to get in.
Yes, hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
My name's Steve Dunlop. I was curious about a very small part of the portfolio, community development, which is about 1%, but seems to be all in 91-day T-bills.
No, that's just a benchmark. So we have a long-time commitment to community investing. The target is 1% of the portfolio, and it consists of microfinance funds, community development funds, community housing funds in many locations around the country. I think we're just very recently made two investments in the New Orleans community, since we're going to be there for General Assembly. And if any of you are there, please come to the workshop, and those the people who manage those two funds will be talking about their work. But no, it's a wide variety of community development finance institutions.
Okay, thanks.
This is Bill Hardam from Wilmington.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah, our church just made a $50,000 investment in a community development institution, and we applied for a matching grant, which turns out to be $10,000, I guess. Does that come from this community development pot of money?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so...
Yeah, so of the $1.5 million, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head, I think about $500,000 or so is... maybe $450,000 consists of these matching investments.
Okay, so that was another new investment, $10,000 in the First State Community Loan Fund.
Great. Yeah, well, I saw that the other day. I was really excited to see you guys are doing that. It's wonderful.
So are we.
So go ahead and press star 6 if you want to ask a question. Not hearing anything. This would be a record.
Hey, Jim.
Hello.
Okay, I have two people on the line. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Dean Rieger.
Go ahead, Dean.
I'm from the UU Church in Sarasota, Florida.
Fantastic.
And I had a couple questions. Could you send us information about the community development matching grants?
I'll be happy to do that.
And the other question is there, and I understand how it's probably difficult to use an index fund like Vanguard, because we can't identify our priorities when investing there. But do they have any kind of assets which we would be able to invest in at very low management cost? And still meet our priorities?
Yeah. Do you want me to take that, Kathleen?
Sure.
Yeah. So we actually have about a third of our U.S. equity portfolio is indexed.
Okay.
But it's done in a way that is really consistent with our values. So it's what's called here RUM line. So it's the first grade line on your performance report on page 3. RUM line is a investment company that does custom index funds. So what we have done is we have given specific instructions to RUM line to track the Russell 1000 with the portfolio, but to skew it towards the companies that perform better on environmental, social, and governance measures. We hire a consultant who puts together a database of these ESG scores. We give the scores to them, and they feed it into their computer, and it spits out a portfolio which tracks the index, and you can see it's very, very close. You know, going out many years, it's within a few basis points. So it tracks the index very well. It's very low fee. I think we pay 12 basis points. And in other words, 0.12% is what we pay for that. But it reflects our values. It skews towards the better ESG performers, but it almost exactly tracks the benchmark. So all that said, the other thing I've heard just in the last couple of weeks from a couple of different sources is that the because the S&P 500 is near a peak or at a peak, that there is some danger in loading up on these large cap index funds, and that we may see some significant outflows from those funds over the next year. So I think we're happy with keeping a significant exposure to these active managers. I don't know, Kathleen, if you wanted to say anything about that.
I think that's a very good point. I'm very impressed with RumLine's ability to add value with our values on a low fee basis, and I do think we're coming up on a period of time where, if that type of scenario where there's a lot of volatility and flows coming out of very crowded equity markets, our active approach and our differentiation, which comes from our values, I think will really benefit us. So I do think this is a good long-term approach.
Okay. Thank you.
I was the other question. This is...
Go ahead.
Jeanette Gruber from Peoria, Illinois. We have invested our trust funds with you. And I just have two things. One's an idea. I don't know if you've looked at DFA, Dimensional Fund Advisors, for specialty index style opportunity at a reasonable price. I don't know if you've looked at that, but I just would suggest their name. And then the second thing I wanted is, I hope, pretty basic. I just would like, I can't see the visuals today. I'm very glad I was able to even make the call. So can you just review for me, how much have we got in bonds? How much have we got in stocks? How much have we got in everything else? I just want the really basic mix.
Sure. Tim, do you want me to do that?
Sure.
So 30.9 in domestic equity. Is that too granular? Do you want it just as basic as equity and fixed, and I can total that up, or I can give you domestic, international?
Domestic equity is helpful. No, I like what you're doing. What you said is useful to me. Go ahead. 30.9 in
domestic equity. 26.3 in international equity.
Wow, great. Okay.
22.5 in fixed income.
Okay.
14.3 in opportunistic.
Okay.
And 2.2 in private market, opportunistic, 0.9 in community development, and 2.9 in cash.
Thank you very much. That was very helpful. That's exactly the style I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Great.
Yeah, and you can get all these slides. They're posted on the website. So just go to uucef.org, and over on the right side, there's a link to the slide presentation.
Yeah, slide 7 sounded the most interesting to me. I may go look that one up. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Hi, this is Catherine Allen from the Davenport Iowa Church. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, my question is, of the funds that are still being held in either fossil fuels or in utilities, what kind of participation do you currently have in shareholder activism?
Well, we are, you know, we are a very active shareholder. We filed about 15 different resolutions this year. We got into dialogues with several of the companies. So, for instance, Xcel, which is one of the big utility companies in the Midwest and West, we asked them to do basically a strategic plan showing how their energy mix and capital investment could be consistent with the Paris Agreement. In other words, with the 80% reduction by 2050.
Uh-huh.
And they produced a very good report with plans which are actually already underway. Their emissions are already dropping pretty drastically. They're retiring coal plants, adding renewables, and they are actually on track to meet the goal. So that's just one example. But we also work with other groups of investors. So there's a group called the Investor Network on Climate Risk that's organized by Ceres and a lot of really big investors. So we work with them to try to put pressure on companies to reduce their emissions and to develop strategies to be consistent with a two-degree world. And I'll just give one other example. So we were not a filer on this, but it was part of the work of this group where we're an active participant. There was a resolution at Occidental, and this was just last week, asking for the kind of strategic plan that we got from Xcel. But at Occidental Petroleum, the resolution got over 60% support, which is phenomenal. And it's because BlackRock and a couple of the other huge mutual fund companies switched from abstaining or voting with management to voting for the resolution. So this is really a trend that's going to put a lot of pressure on companies to be more responsive to investors that are concerned about climate. So that's I could go
Wonderful.
On, but those are a couple of highlights.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I suspect there will be more about it at GA.
Yes. There will be a full report for GA, yep.
Thank you.
Anything about employee relations?
There are no particular resolutions on that. There are that's part of our screening process, though. It goes into the ESG analysis. We look at how employees get treated, and again, we favor the companies that do a better job and exclude the ones that do a bad job.
Thank you.
This is Tim Miller from Durango. I had a couple of questions. Is there a return profile associated with that MSCI ACWI low carbon target, that aspirational target? Just wonder what the return hit might be with going really green.
Yeah, I don't, there is not. There's not a return that I know of. That's a really interesting question. I'm going to follow up on that, and I'll send everybody an email and see if there is. But, you know, to the broader question you just alluded to, is there a hit for pursuing ESG, you know, my best evidence is back to this Rumline portfolio. So the Rumline portfolio is designed to track the Russell 1000, and we've been doing it for 10 years. We've been applying these rigorous ESG screens, leaving out the bad companies and skewing towards the better companies, and it's right on the index. I mean, if you look at the 7-year number, it's 11.6% versus 11.7. So it's right on the benchmark. You know, the more recent 1-year number is 16.5 versus 16.6. So there's no sacrifice there for shaping the portfolio in line with ESG concerns.
No,
but I'll ask about that that MSCI low carbon portfolio.
Good. And I had one other question. Is there a way to comment in basis point language? I think I heard a reference to the weight average portfolio fees trending down maybe over the last couple of years. Can Kathleen or someone quantify that, or I was just trying to get a sense for has there been a movement towards somewhat lower fees as moved from, you know, private equity to more opportunistic things?
Yeah, right now it's pretty flat. It's been, you know, between 1% and 1.1% for a long time. You know, we've added a couple managers with higher fees. As Kathleen was talking about, we also trimmed some of the fees in the fixed income area. So net-net, I think it's about the same.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I'm not hearing any other questions right now. Pause for 1 second. Okay. All right. So let's. It's coming right up on 4 o'clock. I want to thank Kathleen for being on the call, for the great presentation, and for your work on the committee, which of course is all volunteer. Kathleen has a busy life as a portfolio manager in the fixed income space, and so do all the other members on the committee, and I really appreciate all their work. And thank you all for being on the call. Thank you all for being investors in the fund. If you do have other questions that you are not able to ask, just send me an email at treasurer@uua.org, and we will be happy to respond, or give me a call, and my contact information is at the end of the slide presentation. I'm always happy to talk to the good people who are investing in the fund. So thanks, everybody, and have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.